On this episode of the podcast, I have with me Madeline Minshew. She is the Vice President of Culture at True Ventures. We're going to be talking about hiring your first head of people and why do you need one? At what point should you hire one? Allowing them to do their job essentially is a really key component of this. And if you wait too long, there are some problems. We're going to talk about a few other things in the middle there, and I'm excited to have you on the show. Thanks for taking the time.
Thank you for having me. Excited to be here.
Before we start, Madeline, tell us what True Ventures does. I want to make sure everyone understands kind of the companies you guys look at, companies you invest in, and that kind of thing.
Yeah. So True Ventures, we are an early stage venture capital firm based in Silicon Valley. Most of the time at True, we try and follow founders into innovative new markets. And we always say, you know, we want to back the most extraordinary people doing the most extraordinary things. The earlier, the better. And so where we like to invest is all across the board. We are not sector specific. We are agnostic. And most of the time, many times, our investments are made before we have pitch decks. But it is something that we resonate with the person, with the idea, with the market. So we've invested in hardware, in software, in consumer brands. It's much more about an extraordinary person with an extraordinary idea who wants to change the world.
That in of itself is an episode because my mind was racing. I go, I'd love to understand the characteristic of that founder that you identify, because I think that's an interesting topic in of itself, and we will leave that for another day. This episode, we're going to be talking about that first people hire. Obviously, you guys work with a lot of founders who are, you know, working in innovative spaces. As I just mentioned, they're working on stuff that's really complicated, complex, might be new, all those things possibly as well. At the same time, the people role is interesting because a lot of times there isn't a person responsible. And a lot of times, sometimes, maybe a lot of times, but sometimes at least, it's a role we hire for too late. And at that point, there's a lot of wheels in motion. Somebody's coming and stepping in, trying to fix things, bring in process, a whole slew of things. I mean, you know this better than I do. You're on that ground level. Tell us about, let's assume we already have a company that's already a startup. They already have some engineers. They're a little bit further ahead. You know, there's seed stage. There's some people working. There's product development. All that stuff's happening. At what point do you start needing to look for that first head of people?
So, of course, no one right answer. We've had companies, and I've seen companies hire their first head of people as the second hire. I have had seen people where they've waited until 150, 200. It is much more business dependent and company dependent than an agnostic answer. So often it happens to be around the scale. How quickly are you changing? Are you growing? Do you need support and strategic thought put around another one of your business products, which is your people, right? How much strategic thought do you need to retain, develop, and hire your talent? So that's a good question to keep in mind when you're thinking about, you know, how early or how late. If we're looking at a general range, I would say it's definitely earlier than it used to be. I think companies used to wait till 50 to 100 people. Now I see typically around 25 to 50 people start thinking about what does a head of people look like for us.
Let me ask you this question. So you mentioned the second person, sometimes 150 people. It does make sense, different strategies of people. Have you seen, I guess, is there any differences in terms of how those orgs are built when you have somebody who's the second hire, for an example, second hire in is somebody who's in the people function versus 200?
Totally. Yeah. And of course, with the second hire, that person wasn't solely focused on people. There weren't enough people. But it was with the intention that this person would have people leadership responsibilities, ownership for the function, and for the vision of their people strategy. What I would say is often a good tell is how involved does the founder want to be and have to be early. And the founder early should be the de facto head of people from a culture standpoint, from a leadership standpoint, and generally from kind of, it is a wonderful experience to learn what actually goes into the role. It gives a lot of respect and it gives a lot of empathy as they hire out. Just like in any other function, it's helpful to understand what the people do that report into you. And so does that kind of paint a picture of what they can do, when to get involved? I think a founder has a very unique skill set and a very short amount of time in their day that they can allocate to certain things, right? It's a very condensed, they're working with condensed time periods. And so if ever there's a moment where you're thinking, is this the most valuable time for my skill set, and you're a founder, and the answer is no, then likely you are not doing the right job anymore. You need to always be focused on certain things that only CEOs, only founders can do. So when that happens, often thinking about, well, who could be a value add when it comes to retaining, hiring, and developing our talent?
Do you see, I guess we do see it, but we do see situations where the founder does bring in somebody to run the people talent function, but that person is really an assistant to the founder because they're not willing to let go. They still want to have their approval on everything. They still think they know the culture the best or the best profile, all those, they know better. So it's hard for them to let go. You mentioned letting go, and I guess that's where the question's heading to, is when you're working with a founder that has put, let's say, a talent person or people person in that position, it's like, listen, I need you to understand, I know I can run, walk, and chew gum at the same time. Remarkable. You need to let me take this and run with it because it's an expertise. You are a co-founder, you're a founder, whatever you are, you're not necessarily a people or talent leader.
Yeah, I think the dynamic is really delicate. My opinion is actually the chief product officer and the chief people officer tend to be the most emotionally charged roles at a company because they can be the most close to the founder's heart and their vision. The founder does imprint the culture. And so where a lot of heads of people get in trouble is saying, here's my vision, I'm going to run with it. That's just like with chief product officer. It's not your baby. You can come and partner and collaborate and be inspired and offer your expertise. But at the end of the day, it is a dynamic relationship that is a two-way street. So I think in hiring this person, your first head of people or, you know, your chief people officer, when you are a Series F or a public company, there needs to be a lot of clarity about what is the vision for the culture at this company? What is the strategy for what you want to achieve? Do we agree? Do we disagree? What do we have an alignment on cultural tenets to build this company from a people standpoint? I think that is often an overlooked conversation.
You know, that brings up an interesting point. I know we're talking about first people hires, but it popped into my head. I'm going to ask you because I think I'm curious of your opinion. But I recently spoke to somebody who took a chief people officer role at a fairly nice sized company, and they'd experienced a lot of growth. And this person's coming in and having to walk a tightrope of preserving the founder's culture that got imprinted, but yet bringing in process structure. And I guess a startup of any size or a company of any size can really run into this. So if you are coming into a position, whether it's the first chief or head of or any of those roles, but you're coming to a position where there is an existing culture, it's great. But as you're going to scale, you know there are things that need to be brought in. There's process, which is going to alter some of that culture, right? And, you know, people are not going to want to necessarily follow it because it was easy to do it a different way. How do you kind of navigate that with the stakeholders?
Yeah, I mean, I think, look, there's a difference between culture and operating system, a company's operating system, right? Like the cultural tenets around the core behaviors or the core values or beliefs that influence how we work. That, in my opinion, is different than the operating system of, you know, your feedback process, your compensation process. It informs those processes for sure, because there's still behaviors at play. But to scale, and even before you scale, to put in place a great infrastructure that can flexibly support a high growth startup, there does need to be an evolution of that first imprint. The first imprint of culture, when you're one employee, when you're 10, when you're 50, there are the behaviors that may stay the same, but how those behaviors manifest may look different depending on the size and the stage and just where you're at in the business cycle of that company. And so I think it is an important ongoing conversation to ask ourselves, especially in high growth startups, you know, every 6 months, do our current values still support and lead to the outcomes we want? Do the current behaviors still support the company and the outcome we want to see? If yes, great. If no, let's fix it. It's constant kind of evolution and iteration of not, it doesn't need to be the core values that change, but how those values show up and then the processes that support those values to be true.
Yeah, it's interesting. I like the distinction, I guess, to kind of piggyback. I do think sometimes we see that imprinted culture morphing into process because it's easier to do what the founder's asked to do. And it kind of just becomes an extended evolution. Processes are built to support what that original vision, the culture. And I think the standards you said, all those things kind of happen. At some point, that the maturation of these components, and we talked about the founder not letting go. I guess on the flip side, empowering this people person to come in to do their job, to actually allow them to partner with you, to allow you to enhance and evolve that original imprint, that culture. What are some things founders can do? Because obviously you mentioned don't rock the boat. That's one of the things. But obviously as a founder, or maybe a people person, how do they, that's such a fine line to make sure you don't rock the boat, but you change it. So it's kind of, I kind of rock the boat a little bit, but not too much. It's kind of, it's not
totally
an easy one.
And I would push back against absolutely rock the boat. Be the type of person that rocks the boat. Those are what startups need. However, bring people along, right? And so I think, you know, what is the right balance there? It is really around clarity and communication and being super clear around the intention. I think a big mix-up happens when people leaders build an agnostic best company versus what is the best company for this business. That's where I see a lot of people get into trouble, setting up all these processes or these structures, or we need to have this because that's what great companies have. Well, let's take a step back. Like, what do we want our company to solve? What are the business goals we're working towards? And from there, you derive your people strategy. Make it specific to the problems you're facing, to the people you have on your team, to the geographies you're operating in. The more specific, I think, the better. And then, you know, bite off, especially if you're the first, I think it's important that you see value in the business from the new strategies you're introducing. So if you are introducing career development plans, how is that going to impact the business? Is that going to ensure we cut hiring costs because we can promote internally? If we introduce, I don't know, manager training, is that going to help us because then we have less attrition? People are leaving. They're less likely to leave because the number one cause of people leaving is a bad manager. So there's always a business reason, but ground your work in the business reason and in the people purpose. I think grounding it, finding that common ground is very important.
Something interesting there that you mentioned, you'd said before, and you kind of started talking about the don't build the best, build the right. A lot of times the first people I hire is coming in and the founder is trying to build best. They want the best engineer. They want the best product person. They want the best. And thinking those individual best people will actually enhance the sum of its parts. Is that something, and you, and then you see talent people come in, people come in and say, listen, we have to hire for these roles. No one's saying, you know, hire the wrong person or don't hire the best person. But somebody actually told me candidates don't get better, they get different. And at some point, you have to know, you have to have some kind of, you know, some kind of criteria to go, well, we have found what is the optimal balance versus we're going to keep interviewing, keep looking until we find that, you know, mythical person that comes in, does four jobs and takes less money and less equity. And we're all going to win with that. I mean, that's a consistent challenge across startups, I guess, that I've kind of seen.
Right. And so the consistent challenge you're describing is the balance between, you know, in pursuit of the best versus what is the right. Yeah. And it happens with candidates. It happens with processes. And a lot of what makes a startup great is that relentless quest to find what's perfect. The maturity comes from understanding that the perfect endpoint doesn't exist, but the process to sharpen your journey does. And so I think understanding, are we getting better or are we just cycling through another process? Because if we are getting better and we are learning, great, we're not done yet. If we're just cycling through because we are not confident enough to say, you know, it's not perfect, but perfect is the enemy of done. And this is a startup and we got to go. That's really hard when it comes to hiring and it's not recommended, right? Hire slow, fire fast is what they say, but it's very hard to do that when you needed the person yesterday and you have 10 inbound leads and you need a new head of sales. So I think what I would go back to is like, what's broken about the process that we're not finding the answer we need? What are we not figuring out sooner? How do we figure out sooner that this candidate isn't a fit? And then I would go back to, okay, our process can be iterated. We can go through this cycle again because we're still learning.
Absolutely. I know we've been talking kind of this balance, you know, first person in, somebody responsible, head of, chief, all that kind of scenarios. I think it's been great dialogue. I think I mentioned to you before we started recording that, you know, we actually have seen an interesting period in the last 6 months, a year, where talent, people have been unemployed. They're going to be getting back into their jobs. They're going to be talking to these first-time founders. And a lot of people are going to be eager to, I just want a job. Like I really just need to get back to work. I'm excited. I just need to get back to it. And we might not be always asking the right questions to put ourselves in the right positions. So I guess, is there any advice you have for people that might be out there looking for what are these leadership roles, the questions they should be asking to make sure that they are going to be in a position where they can be empowered, be, you know, the right partner to these founders or the team? Is there any insights you have to share?
You know, I think I go back to what I said earlier when it's around, do you have synergy with the founder? And do you have a shared vision of how, what, when around people strategy? And I don't think it needs to be perfect, but I do think understanding, like, I come from it from a very business perspective. What are the core business goals that our people need to support and achieve? From there, okay, what are the current gaps that we don't have? What is the next 18 to 24 months growth from a revenue, a people, and a product perspective? Understanding it from that lens, and then trying to understand too, how important are our people to your business strategy, and asking that question and seeing how the founder reacts as well, because people are really the only unique commodity that you have. They are the most important product at any startup. They're the people that build the end product. And so we see this a lot with second time, third time repeat founders, where their people and the culture is actually their first priority. Because the blood, sweat, and tears to repair something that's broken, a broken culture or a broken people strategy, is much more painful than just to get it right in the beginning. And so I would start there. Like, what are the business goals? How do people work into that business strategy? How important is your people strategy to achieving your business goals.
Yeah, I think that's really good advice. And I think, you know, slowing down and make sure you ask those questions up front, get as much of that detail. I mean, you ask some, you know, I think there's some questions in there that sometimes are hard for people to broach, but this is what you're getting yourself into. You got to
listen. It's harder to get fired than it is to ask the question.
That's actually really true. That's actually a good one. From the flip opposite, you know, if you're a founder and you're looking to bring in your first head of people and you're going through and you're interviewing, trying to avoid the best versus right debate we talked about, what should a founder or what should the hiring team look for in terms of knowing they found somebody they can partner with?
You know, I think it is, again, unique to each business, right? Like, what aspects about the culture do you want this person to amplify and to continue? What parts do you want this person to expand? What areas are missing from your company? And getting a good sense before you start interviewing around, you know, what is the gap on our leadership team? Or what is the gap in this company that we're looking for someone to fill from an EQ standpoint and then from a business standpoint? I think the most important thing though is the working relationship, right? Like you will spend the head of people, you know, I'm just thinking about how much time I spent with every one of my CEOs and founders, you know, most days, multiple times a day, we're just constantly talking about something, anything, right? Like it could be on their leadership development, on their emotional standing, on a new executive hire, an upcoming board meeting, on an internal communication problem we're dealing with. There's so many different touch points. So like, do you want to spend a ton of time with this person? Do you respect them? And do you trust them to take care of your baby, right? The people and this company, they are precious. Do you feel like they will treat them as preciously as you would?
Absolutely. I like that. I think it's every founder has a stronghold at some point for it to grow, like much like any, if you have a child that you do have to give it some room, you know, failure and growth all go hand in hand. So it does make sense. You said something that I wanted to finish on because I'm curious. I'm always curious about this. I mentioned, I think before we started the recording about the strategic role of this of people in leadership, in people talent. You mentioned speaking to the CEO countless times, how close the partnership is. I come from an engineering world. I see the TA world and I see both sides of the coin and I see where each one fits. And sometimes I look at this and I go, the CTO, the chief product officer have slightly different relationships or maybe different standings, different views, different connotations versus the chief people officer, not because it's a lesser role, but for some reason it has a different meaning. It's got that chief or head of, but they're slightly dealt with differently depending on the org. I'm not going to generalize. I'm going to say every org's like this, but we do see people talking about HR having a seat at the table, talent having a seat at the table. And we talk about this notion that there should be a seat at the table. No one ever asks the CTO if they need a seat at the table. They have a chief in the title. They're sitting along with the rest of the C-level team, and that's pretty much it. Is that a perception? Is that a marketing issue? Is that just a talent still evolving and pushing past some of those old barriers? What are your thoughts? I know there's no right answer, but I was just curious your thoughts.
I think it's an evolution. I do think how HR stereotypically, or maybe in the past, was perceived was more of a back office function. And as culture shifted, as the meaning of work and what work represented for employees has shifted, HR or people, whatever you want to call it, has thus shifted as well. And the role of the chief people officer has needed to evolve to be more strategic, more business minded, and more business informed. And I think the gap exists, much like I said earlier on, is when there is a kind of a gap between building the best culture and building the best culture, team, and talent for this business. And so you know, I don't think anything is deserved. I think you earn it. And so each person earns the right to sit at the table based on what they can bring to the table. And so make sure you're bringing unique value that moves the business forward. I think staying grounded in that, and then a solutions mindset, there's enough problems. Come with solutions, or come with, you know, questions. But if you only come with problems, which can be hard for functions like HR and talent and finance, typically there are a lot of trickier situations that aren't fun. Like we closed a new deal or brought in X amount of millions of dollars. There tend to be much more draining problems. And so have a solution.
I like that. Honestly, as you were speaking, I was thinking about, you know, when I worked in technology, the CIO was viewed very similarly. It's a back office function, make sure the business is run. There was actually a divide. You guys are IT, not even technology at that point. And then there is the business, meaning the business is why you exist. And as technology became instrumental, impacted P&L, impacted efficiency, people were like, well, what do you think? And that conversation of where you come in, at what stage you come in to solve problems, kind of moves forward. And I think, you know, security leaders have had the same thing. I think it's interesting because, you know, in the people talent space, I think what you said is absolutely, you know, asking questions and how to view the problem and being further upstream in terms of those solutions at the bigger picture. I think those are what we're missing. And I, like you said, if somebody can bring that to the table, but not just problems, I think that's the difference maker, because that's where the other roles have evolved to. And it's a skill, but it's also hard because we're in the weeds all the time. And when we have to bring our heads up and look at that level, we're only dealing with problems. I think a lot of other, you know, C-level people have that same thing, but you know, I guess the functions have been around longer. I think that's fair. Like CIOs have been around for decades. You know, I think a chief people officer is still a newer role in comparison. I talk to security people and they're like, the CISO role is still fairly new. And I like that line. So I think it's because it's still new. That's how I kind of have come to understand this. But I definitely appreciate your thoughts on that. I know there's no right answer. I always find it fascinating. So I did love your viewpoint on that. I know you got to get back to your day job. I could ask you questions for a while.
No, thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. If someone does want to reach out to you, because we covered a lot of ground, different perspectives, you took every question that I could possibly think of and had a great answer. If somebody does want to follow up with you, what is a good way of doing that with you?
Email. I am madeline@trueventures.com.
All right. Well, there you go. We'll make sure we include some of those details in the show notes for you. I appreciate your time. Hope you feel better. Thank you for taking the time to be on the show.
Thank you. Of course. Of course. Thanks so much.
Absolutely. That's it for the episode. I'll be back again, different guests, different topic. If you found value in this episode, and I really think we covered a ton of different angles, so I'm going to be hard-pressed to realize that somebody out there won't, share it with somebody else. I think there's a lot of good content. If you're a founder, if you're working in this field and talented people, I think there's a lot of things in here that could be beneficial. Like, subscribe, review, let me know how we're doing. Let me know if you want me to cover a topic I hadn't thought about in the past. And until next time, thank you and goodbye.